are allows us to see that an assumption is merely one possibility. When we are aware that our assumptions are not necessarily truth but simply possibilities, little discipline is required to not act on them. We already know that an assumption is a story we have created that shows a possibility, and if life presents a different truth, then we detach from that possibility because it no longer serves us. Exercise. Discovering the foundation of your beliefs through assumptions. Here is a little exercise for you. Tap into your memory and recall those experiences by which you made assumptions that were later shown to be untrue. Why did you make the assumptions you made? Identify the missing pieces of information and think about why you chose to fill in the gaps the way you did at the time. In almost every case, the stories you create will be based on your attachments to certain belief structures, and if you leave the source of these attachments uninvestigated, they will assuredly cause you future suffering. For example, in the earlier fictitious example of my girlfriend surprising me with dinner, I had assumed she was late because she was cheating on me. If this assumption goes unchecked, the wound of her imagined betrayal would negatively impact my emotional sense of self and reinforce my faulty beliefs about relationships just as if it had been true. In other words, a wound that was created by an assumption will have a lasting impact as an attachment until the moment I see the fallacy of my assumption. But you can't stop with just recognizing the assumption. The purpose of this exercise is to become aware of the foundation of your beliefs, especially the ones that have a negative impact on your life. When we build our belief structure on assumptions and we become attached to that structure, we are living in ignorance. The truth, however, is the path to freedom. Becoming aware of those assumptions and the source of our attachment to them allows us the opportunity to truly heal from a wound. The quest for truth versus the quest for being right. When you become aware of how attachment distorts and corrupts knowledge, you can begin to see how some people easily confuse the quest for truth with the quest for being right. These are not the same thing. The quest to be right is about self-importance. We need to be right in order to accept ourselves. This is a condition we place on our self-acceptance and our acceptance of others. The quest for truth, on the other hand, is the desire to discover, regardless of whether our beliefs are supported in the process. Making a choice to accept or reject our beliefs. My grandmother, Madre Sarita, was a faith healer. People who witnessed her actions would create fantastical stories about them, attributing magical qualities to her ability to help others achieve better health. They called themselves believers. Every time she healed someone, an observer would analyze and describe her actions, making it all sound so phenomenal and otherworldly. My grandmother would always say, "God healed this person, not me." Yet others would still put their own spin on it and spread their belief to others. Since these fantastic stories were about my grandmother, I really wanted to believe in them. I had witnessed many of the same events, as I saw many people truly recover from their ailments. But I began to notice that other people's perceptions of what had happened didn't necessarily fit mine. While I felt an experience, other people tried to explain it by calling it magic. Somewhere between the lines was the truth, but all the superlatives kept it hidden. This made it mystical and fueled fanaticism in those people who were firmly attached to such a belief. So at a young age, I had to learn to decipher what was truth and what was just a story. I learned to rely on my own perception, but to question my own perception as well. If I had tried to tell someone who insisted Madre Sarita had performed magic that they were misperceiving something about the action, they never would have believed me. After all, they were speaking of something they had personally witnessed and benefited from. Magic. The believers would dismiss anyone who disagreed with them as not being able to understand. So I learned to let it go. As I became aware of my attachment to being right, my need to convince them to see it from my point of view was reflected back to me. Later, I thought I could depend on things I learned in school to be true. After all, what I was learning was drawn from common sense and history. Then one day, my father told me not to believe everything I was learning in school. In much the same way people had interpreted Madre Sarita's actions, people had interpreted the stories and ideas I was being taught. That news really threw me for a loop, but I came to understand that I had to look for the truth in all cases. In Mexico, where I spent much of my childhood, there is a story that schools teach about six heroic cadets who defended themselves in the war against the United States. At the Battle of Chapultepec, the U.S. Army came into Mexico City from the west and tried to take over the palace. Six cadets remained, and they defended the palace and the city, but they fell one by one. Juan Escutia, the last of Los Niños Héroes, refused to be taken by the enemy. He wrapped himself in a Mexican flag and threw himself from the palace point. When you go to Chapultepec Castle and see the area where he supposedly landed, and then look to the stone marking the point from where he supposedly jumped, it seems impossible for him to have accomplished this feat. Modern historians refute this patriotic myth, and some say the cadets never existed at all, despite genealogical evidence. Fact or fiction, it is taught in history textbooks. Mexico is not the only country or culture whose textbooks contain stories rather than facts. As a child, I believed the story of Los Niños Héroes because I didn't know better. Now I have the choice to believe it or not. I know that within the words, a feeling of patriotism can be found. That is truth, even if the story is false. I choose to believe I am a Toltec, a descendant of the Eagle Knights, because I choose to believe the words of my great-great-grandfather, Don Exequio, who passed away when he was 116 years old. He was already an elder when my grandmother was born in 1910. His word stands. This belief is a leap of faith. My family may pass on the teachings of Eagle Knights, but are we truly descendants, as our oral traditions tell us? Knowing that our history is based on word in no way negates it. I also have to be honest in understanding that the stories we tell now contain generations of distortions and adaptations. Still, the lessons remain the same, and so I choose to believe in the lesson. That is my preference. The stories that we tell about ourselves to make us feel comfortable and safe are simply history. We can choose to believe because we want to, keeping in mind that the stories do not describe the truth of who we really are. And we must be careful, as the very act of wanting to believe in these stories blinds us to the truth. Believing the stories without question or scrutiny ultimately leads to disillusionment, as we become attached to the identity we have created for ourselves through the telling of the story. Remember, a story can describe a moment, an experience, a lesson in life, but regardless of how clean a reflection of the truth it may be, it is still a story that we can choose to believe or not. Things in our world go beyond reason and logic. But to believe in the mystical or in the scientific without being skeptical is letting knowledge take control. The fantasy then becomes more real than life itself, to the point where we spend so much time looking for the spectacular that we don't realize joy can be found in the everyday occurrences happening all around us. When we base our identity and self-importance on what we believe, regardless of whether it is in the earthly or the supernatural realm, we will find it difficult to be skeptical. And when we question everything we believe in, the foundation on which we have built our identity will prove to be shaky. But remember, self-confidence is being able and willing to question your own beliefs. Many people believe that self-confidence means standing behind your beliefs 100%. If you fail to listen to what else is going on in the world, and only rely on what you think you know and believe, you've attached yourself to an idea that blinds. This is not confidence. It is stubbornness. We are conditioned to behave in such a way that whenever we encounter a truth that contradicts something we believe, we are quick to either reject it or create a story that protects our belief and further weaves a web of distortion. In so doing, we keep distorting our faith further, forming new beliefs to keep our sense of self safe. The lesson here is to shift our confidence away from our beliefs and back to ourselves, since we are the living beings who give life to the beliefs in the first place. In other words, rather than having confidence in what we know, we have confidence in who we are. Instead of defending or debating a belief with all our might, we look and listen to what is going on around us. Questioning ourselves and being open to changing our minds about something does not mean that we must question our core being. With self-confidence, we can simply question our beliefs and the stories we've created to describe our being. Ask yourself, where did I learn that belief? How is that belief affecting me? Am I using that belief well? Do I still need that belief? These questions can help you identify the things that inhibit your full potential. Consider a particular issue, action, or relationship. Are your past beliefs regarding that topic still true in the present? We often fear that changing our point of view is admitting that something about us is wrong. Thinking we have been wrong can lead to guilt because actions we've taken and things we've said have been based on that one belief. If we decide that a belief is no longer working for us, it can potentially make us question every past action that was based on that belief. It does not have to be this way. Instead, we can choose to be aware that what works one day may not work the next. Things change, and we do not need to go back over each and every action. Our virtue has not been lost. Remember to proceed with self-love and self-acceptance at all times, as this is the only path to real and lasting change. In the next chapter, we will continue with the exploration of how being unaware of our attachments can cause suffering in our lives, especially when dealing with others. Chapter 13. Recognizing the Role of Attachments in Conflict. Most of us have an ideal version of how we think the world should be. I have to. You must. They should. It has to be. When we hear these words, we are listening to the voices of our narrators expressing an agreement that is at a higher level of attachment. The narrators are reminding us how things are to progress within the framework of our understanding in order for the world to be the way we want or expect it to be. These are the rules we have created for ourselves to live by. And if we fail to follow these rules, we judge ourselves and others harshly. We have to get it right, and our beliefs dictate to us what that means. Depending on our level of attachment to a particular belief, we may not waver in the least, remaining so closed-minded that we cannot even think about alternatives. Whenever we hear someone say that the world should be such and such a way, as beautiful as the idea may be, we must realize that it can be easily corrupted, because for the world to be in this ideal state, the idealist must impose his or her beliefs on others and subjugate those who refuse to fit in with their perfect image of the world. Sometimes we think that the only way to make someone a better person, and by extension make the world a better place, is to convince them that they should see things our way. But there are plenty of people around us who don't behave the way we think they should, and we waste energy trying to convince them to be something they are not, instead of allowing them to be who they are. When we think that we know more or better than someone else, we are setting ourselves up for a clash of beliefs. This is what corrupts a beautiful idea. The idea can be anything: organic food, civil rights, tolerance, animal rights, world peace, or any seemingly noble idea you can think of. A fanatical attachment to any of these ideas will create more harm than good. Once the attachment to the belief outweighs the importance of the message, it corrupts the idea. Respect is lost, and freedom is compromised. Without respect for the freedom of choice, peace is not possible. When we become so attached to these noble beliefs, we use guilt or place conditions on others to encourage them to conform to our standards. We know we are doing this when we hear ourselves say things like, "Aren't you ashamed of what you're doing?" Or, "How could you be so thoughtless?" To bend others to our will, we look for anything that tugs at their emotional structure. And when we cannot find any buttons to push, we may become even angrier and more uncompromising. In the case of loved ones whom we feel are harming themselves through bad habits, we may think by instilling fear in them we can bring about lasting change. "You must get help. You have to let me help you. You should not be doing this to yourself." Unfortunately, this type of approach simply causes more pain. Someone who is shamed into making changes isn't changing anything. We are all free to choose our beliefs and create our attachments from our own point of view. There is no one master plan that we all must follow or perish. There are 7 billion people living in our world, and so there are 7 billion different points of view. If we each insisted that only our point of view is valid, then we would also have 7 billion clashes in our world. As long as we engage in the "I am right and you are wrong" struggle, there will always be conflict. It is our attachment to being right, our attachment to our personal importance, that keeps us from experiencing freedom in both our personal dream and the dream of the planet. Freedom of choice is not about being right or wrong. It is about opening up the channels of communication and respecting one another as human beings in order to create a community that we share with one another. When we become too attached to an ideal, the first thing that we lose is respect, first for the people around us and eventually for ourselves. While our points of view may differ, we are all a product of the same source. The only thing that separates us is our attachment to our own point of view, and our attachment to the belief that others must share it. This is where we begin putting conditions on our love for one another, and this is the source of conflict. Defending our ideals. Once you are aware of your beliefs, you will be able to question your ideals and viewpoints. With awareness, this questioning will no longer shake your foundation. You will no longer find yourself defending your viewpoints or imposing them upon others. If two people who have very different beliefs argue, the argument might never end. In an attempt to convince each other to change, to fit their version of what they each believe is true, they create a veil between them. Their inability to listen results in a lack of respect. Although it may appear that one side is ahead for a while and then the other, as long as each side is attached to their beliefs, the battle never ends. It is only when one person is able to step back and listen to the other without judging that there is potential for a shift to occur. By consistently questioning our own beliefs, we open up infinite possibilities and avoid getting trapped inside a closed mind that only wants to be right. We do not need to defend ourselves or our beliefs against other people's opinions and beliefs. Our only need is self-respect. When we have self-respect, we do not take what other people say and do personally. If we give in to the temptation to make someone else's actions a personal affront, we have lost that self-respect by saying yes to their agreement. Once we do this, the attachment to this belief makes it necessary for us to switch our motive from one of defense to offense. With one shift, we can easily go from being victim to aggressor, which has a whole new set of consequences. By not taking things personally, we do not give in to our personal importance and can therefore make decisions based on mutual respect that will solve problems instead of making them worse. Recently, a worker came to my home to install something. As I do with anyone who comes to my home, I sat and spoke with him, asking questions and watching him work. He asked me what I did, and I explained a little about what I do. He grew agitated, saying there is only one truth, only one way, and everyone else just wants your money. He spoke about his pastor and the teachings of his church, reiterating that there is only one way. I didn't argue with him. I just listened to what he was saying. By my grandmother's application, that is learning. As he was leaving, he said to me, "When I die, I only have to answer to one person. If I'm wrong, well, I'll find out then." He went on to tell me that the reason he believes is not because he had love or faith, but because he wants to get into heaven. That was his main purpose. At least, that is what he said to me. He said, "Michael, you can say whatever you want to all those people, but remember, there is only one way, one truth." Through listening to him, I had indeed learned something. He shared his belief system, but that is not what I learned. What I learned is that he honestly believed what he was telling me. And who am I to say otherwise? Had I felt the need to retort, this would have been based on my own attachment to my identity and my beliefs, and a battle of personal importance would have begun between us. This worker showed me that if I had chosen to argue with him, I would be forming my own attachment to knowledge, which had nothing to do with him. This gave me the freedom of choice. I was able to look at my belief square in the face and chose to listen to both him and myself. How he chooses to live his life has no bearing on how I live mine. Although I can see how his attachments and his knowledge control him, I know that it is not my place to object. Instead of blindly and deftly arguing a point fueled by our personal importance, we can at least be willing to admit that we might be wrong, or that the situation can be looked at from an entirely different perspective, as in the case of the worker. When we choose to share our truth with others from this place, we can begin building mutual respect. When we look at our beliefs and viewpoints with an open mind, it becomes clear to us how attached we are to our own beliefs. Being aware of our attachments allows us to regain power over our freedom to choose whether or not we want to continue to hold them. The choice is crucial. Sometimes we choose to root for our home team or debate religion or politics with our family. Sometimes we choose to devote a portion of our life to a cause or a movement, and sometimes we choose not to. Having awareness, however, will let us know if our personal importance begins to corrupt the essence of whatever activity we have chosen to engage in. If we find ourselves vehemently defending our position or cause, it means our attachment has crowded out our awareness. Listening to what others say without giving their words power over us allows us to become aware of our own truth. It enables us to see what is real for us and what is just an illusion, a lie fueled by personal importance. The gift of listening will expose any illusions of personal importance. If we are coming from a place of awareness, our truth does not need to be defended through the ego-feeding mechanics of an argument. It requires very little energy on our part to simply state our truth, if we choose to state it. When the truth is simple, you know your foundation is solid. Of course, there may come a time to stand up for that truth. If that time comes, you can be confident that you are standing on firm ground with the full awareness of the power of your own will. There comes a point in life when we grow tired of needing to be right, especially when we see how this ego-feeding need affects our relationships with people who just want to be our friends, with the beautiful souls who just wanted to love us. Our attachments don't let us see further than the tips of our own noses. We all have a catalyst, a call to action, which moves us into making a change in our life. This catalyst almost always comes from outside of us, but as we become aware of how our filter of knowledge is constructed, we realize that lasting change only comes from within. Our changes affect how we interact with the people in our life and impact the communal dream, the dream of the planet. I am the one who said yes and no. I am the one who made all of my agreements, and I am the only one who is able to change them. When I see how my attachments are affecting my relationship with myself and the dream of the planet, I realize that I am the only one who can change it. This is the awakening of our intention in the form of our free will. As you embark upon the final chapter of this book, I wish to leave you with the idea that it truly is possible to engage in our human existence while seeing beyond our attachments and fully experiencing life. My intention is that the final chapter will provide you with the tools to help you exercise your free will. That is the power you have, and I celebrate that to the fullest. I only share my words. I have no power over you. As the words reach you, you are the one who says, "Yes, I agree," or "No, I don't agree." That is the freedom of choice. Chapter 14. Honoring Our Emotions. When we talk about it on paper, detaching or reducing our level of attachment to something doesn't sound so difficult, does it? If we find ourselves in an unhealthy situation, we walk away. If we fail to reach a goal, we try again. If we want to make a change, we move forward with our transformation. There is no need to complicate anything. We keep it simple, moving from one interaction to another without becoming too attached to any one outcome. But in life, it rarely happens this way. This is because we are human, not heartless robots. Our emotions rise to the surface, and we initially feel pain when we try to reduce our dependence on things outside ourselves, the things to which we are most strongly attached. So the question is, how do we deal with the emotions that arise on the path? It's important to keep in mind that our emotions are real and should not be ignored as if they don't exist or stuffed away as if they aren't valid. Emotions create the most authentic anchor we have to ourselves. The whole spectrum of emotions, fear, love, jealousy, insecurity, anger, joy, is very real. But here's the thing. What triggers those emotions may not be real. At this point, you probably understand how this can be true. Emotions help us communicate with each other. Without the ability to express what we are feeling and to recognize how others feel, we would be at some disadvantage. Take the example of my son Alejandro, who was diagnosed with high-functioning autism. We are teaching him how to express his emotions so that we know what he is feeling, and he can interpret what others are feeling. One of the tools we use is a teddy bear, a gift from his aunt, which shows different emotions. We are also teaching him the words that go along with each emotion. This is the most basic use of knowledge, and it is necessary for each of us to learn this throughout our lives, as early as possible, so that we can express our sense of self and convey our needs and desires within the dream of the planet. Some of us, like my little girl Audrey, are really good at sharing what we are experiencing emotionally. Some of us are not as good at it yet, like Alejandro. Still, an emotion is present with or without a label, with or without a facial expression. An emotion is truth. Again, what we are experiencing is real, but what triggered the feeling could be based on an illusion or a distortion. Here is an example. I am holding my newborn son, Alejandro, in my arms, and I am filled with bliss. I am not thinking. I am simply allowing that moment to engulf me. The emotion is real. The moment is real. I have not created a story in my mind. Then, let's say that as I'm holding him, a little thought grows in my head. What if I lose him? All of a sudden, that illusion, that insecurity, that fear has stirred in me. This little seed of fear takes hold, and as I am exposed completely to the emotion, I feel that fear of losing my son engulf me. I go from a moment of complete bliss to a moment of pure terror. The trigger was an illusion, but I still felt the emotions. Our emotions, regardless of the triggers, are expressions of ourselves. These are the important questions to ask. Are we aware of the triggers? Do we know if the trigger is based on reality or if it is based on faulty information? Is the trigger based on an attachment to a certain belief or expectation? Whenever I'm upset, I know that something I hold to be true has been put to the test. I look at that agreement inside and out and ask myself, is it an agreement based on truth or illusion? If I am very attached to that agreement, I might end up using a lot of my energy to keep it alive. If I have to struggle that hard to give something life, it cannot be very solid, can it? If I become skeptical, I am giving myself a choice to once again believe that agreement or not. Uncomfortable emotions are like car alarms. They let us know there is a problem to attend to, a wound for us to work on, thus allowing us to see our own truth. Whenever an emotion gets triggered, it is the opportune moment to ask questions such as, what is this about? What agreement is at the heart of this? What attachment does this threaten? Do I really believe this? Is it important? Answering these questions gives us the opportunity to examine our beliefs and choose whether or not to continue to believe. We honor our emotions by realizing that they are an expression of how we feel and what we are going through. We look at what has triggered our emotions while still allowing ourselves to simply feel. We further honor our emotions by having the awareness that they may have been triggered by something not based on truth. Thus, we use our emotions as a tool for transformation, because they completely expose whatever agreement has been hiding beneath the surface. I am grateful to my emotions for telling me my truth, for it is only through exposure that we regain the power to choose between I will continue to agree and I am ready to let go. Clearing away the smoke from my reflection. When I look into the mirror, I perceive myself this way. I am Miguel, a Toltec, a Nahual, a Mexican-American, an American, a mestizo, a husband, a father, a writer, and so on. When viewed through the rules of my attachments, this is the list of self-definitions I might use as conditional models for self-acceptance. Where there are conditions for self-love, it is because my perception is controlled by internalization or fanaticism. However, without attachments, each and every one of these labels is just a definition that I can choose to either say yes or no to as part of my identity. I can simply choose one of these identifications as the preference by which I want to engage life for the moment. My awareness gives me the opportunity to see my reflection as I am at this moment. The mirror is reflecting my truth, a physical body that is an empty symbol, much like the words in the above list, whose definition of self is dependent upon my agreements. Even without definitions, it is still reflecting a living being with the full potential to go in any direction. Regardless of the name we give it, even a name such as authentic self, it is simply reflecting life. Looking into a clean mirror without the filters of my belief system, the smoky mirror, I perceive life as the I am. The clean mirror is the awareness that reflects the full potential of life. How I define myself and what I say yes or no to, the execution of my intention, are my choice. If I choose, I can call this awareness the authentic self, the representation of life in the form of this body. Whatever I choose, I see myself just as I am. Imagine looking into the mirror and seeing yourself just the way you are at this very moment, without self-judgment. Maybe you become aware that there is something about you that is interfering with your health, physical or emotional. That is the truth of your body right now. When you are looking into a clear mirror, you do not make a self-judgment based on that truth, nor do you need to identify yourself as being unhealthy in some way. You simply look at yourself as who you are at this very moment. Now, from a place of self-love, you can choose to take an action based on your perception, which, in this case, is seeing the truth of the condition of your health. This action is not a condition you place upon yourself to earn self-love. You love yourself for who you are at this moment. Whether you make a change or not has no bearing on this love. This isn't complacency. You are actively making a choice, and that choice is the action of your intent, your full potential. There are 360 degrees of possibilities surrounding you. This point, this now, is your potential. To move forward in any direction is to make a choice. You say yes to something and no to all else. This is true regardless of whether or not you are aware of the infinite possibilities present in each moment. As described throughout these pages, the more attached you are to something, the more your vision is obscured and narrowed, sometimes to the point where you are convinced that there is only one way to proceed. Your attachment to a belief cuts off your ability to see beyond that one possibility. So, as you make choices to let go of attachments that no longer work for you, your options seem to grow and expand. But what you are really doing is increasing your perspective, as all possibilities are there all along. Reclaiming our power and gaining our freedom. As I mentioned in the introduction, my grandmother was my first teacher in the ways of our tradition, and it was through my apprenticeship with her that I learned to quiet my mind and trust my heart, allowing inspiration to flow through me. My grandmother also taught me the power of faith, especially in God, whom she credited for her abilities as a faith healer. In her later years, she began waking up at 3 a.m. to pray and meditate with her rosary and candle. Then she would begin healing, working, and consulting with people in need throughout the day. When I completed college, my father became the teacher of our traditions. Through his guidance, I faced all the attachments I had created throughout my life, letting go to the point where my every wound was painfully exposed. In this way, I was able to heal from the pain of my own creation. It is not easy letting go, especially when the things we believe about ourselves, even those that cause us pain, provide a familiar comfort zone. When we place our personal importance on knowledge, and that is taken away, the crash is very harsh. Eventually, through the continued and authentic process of releasing our attachments, we find that who we are requires no justification to accept ourselves. This realization is very powerful. It's like letting go of the railing when you are certain you are free from any danger by falling. At the time, my dad was spending time in Oceanside, California, and my grandma was there for a visit. Always looking for teaching opportunities, my father recognized an opportunity for a lesson. "Miguel," he said to me, "your grandmother is afraid of death. Help her to let go." I looked at my father with astonishment. My grandmother turned to me and raised her eyebrows as if to say, "Oh, really?" I swallowed. I did not want to do this. "Miguel, help your grandma. Tell her why it's okay to let go of her fear." I immediately got up, and as my grandmother had taught me so many years earlier, I cleared my mind, allowing myself to act and speak without attachment to my thoughts. My job was to help her let go of her final attachment. Level 1. The authentic self. I guided her wheelchair up to the big mirror in the hallway. "Grandma, look at yourself in the mirror. You are beautiful. You are wonderful. You are the most passionate, smartest, and toughest person I have ever known. Imagine everything you hold to be truth. Your family, your children, your Bible, your rosary, your incense, your candles. You have faith in all these things, and this same faith allows you to perform miracles for others. You may have said that it was God who healed people, and while that is still truth, it is also truth that your faith allowed you to do it. Your faith is so strong that everything you believe in comes alive with every breath you take. It is your attachment to this physical form to which you give life that keeps you from wanting to let go. Look into this mirror, Grandma, and imagine these things all around you that you hold dear. Your faith is so strong that you put Sarita in each and every single one of them. In the same way, you have given life to your thoughts, your beliefs, and your ideals. These things are alive because of you. It is time to take your energy back from these things and release your attachments to them. Let go of the fear of what you are without them and what they are without you. When you take back your power from these things, you will no longer identify yourself by them. Then there will be only you. You and your image of Sarita, your body. When you are ready to let go of this final attachment, you will pass away in peace. Madre Sarita kissed me then and nodded. She passed away about a month and a half later. She lived to be 98 years old, and she was always helping others. My love and gratitude for her are always going to be with me. While we may not be talking about literal death here as we discuss the prospect of letting go of our attachments, we are talking about the potential death of how we identify ourselves, the things we love, the knowledge we have, the ideas we create. Everything we hold so dear is alive within us because of the energy we give it through our attachments. It is easier for us to attribute a power to something outside ourselves than it is for us to see that we are the power that gives things in our world life. We are the ones responsible for ourselves and our reality. We are the creators of our own dream. This is why our self-judgment is so strong and alive with a force that can hold us back and rooted to the past. We gave our narrators the power. Fortunately, we do not have to die to reclaim it. Independent of the attachments that weigh us down, each one of us has the freedom to live life to the fullest at any given moment. The field of possibilities awaits our next step, and we can take that step, confident in our ability to do so. When we are aware and see the truth of infinite potential, that is ultimate freedom. Afterward, I have experienced a lot of life since I first started to apprentice in my family's traditions. I have felt the ups and downs of life, from confrontations to harmony, from feeling anger and fear to happiness and love. I have learned that the key to all forms of transformation is awareness. The starting point for any form of transformation is set on our willingness to accept our truth at that moment of awareness, a moment that moves with us along our path of transformation. I developed an attachment to an outcome when I first started my work, but I continued into a process that goes beyond that attachment. I saw that there is an attachment to everything I have ever perceived, and only because I was afraid of the unknown. We feel most at ease with our safety net, of course, but as I began to move outside of that safety zone, the levels of attachment began to take shape, and my understanding of my grandmother's lesson was reflected in my life. We all want to be a part of a group or a community to find that place that allows us to feel as one. We are always looking for that communion, so in the end, all of this work is about the ability to have a harmonious relationship with my brothers, my sisters, and myself. At first, I thought it was about a quest to discover the hidden secrets of life, glazed with incredible stories of the metaphysical. But this practice really is about life itself. It has always been about creating a clear channel of communication with the people I love, starting with myself. Understanding the five levels of attachment is the beginning of reestablishing an unconditional relationship with ourselves. I start by recognizing that my life is worth something and that my body and my mind are the tools by which I am able to express myself, in love, intellect, and awareness. Knowledge turns to wisdom when the information that describes the world is a clear reflection of truth that flows and evolves along with us as we move through life. Love starts with me. We don't all live in a monastery or an ashram, where we are surrounded by people who are working toward the same end, allowing one another to enter into silence and work on our process. Rather, we live in the dream of the planet, where we are continuously interacting with people who find themselves at various levels of their own attachments. As we interact with others and want harmony in those relationships, the harmony starts with us, We become aware of ourselves and accept ourselves, and we are then able to give to others what we hope to receive in return. The discipline of staying in that awareness while being able to relate to others is called controlled folly. This mastery cannot be started without first becoming aware of our own truth, and the five levels of attachment are an instrument that allow us to see our present truth with more clarity. As we begin to reconstruct our personal dream with greater awareness into our personal great work of art, which is always in progress, we have the ability to choose to create the most perfect harmony, if that is our desire. In the end, it is all about seeing knowledge as the building blocks to co-create a dream with another person while maintaining our awareness of self. I enjoy interacting with the dream of the planet. I enjoy using knowledge to communicate my dream with you. I enjoy playing with the world that surrounds me with respect and love. I am a part of this creation. We can all become aware that it is love that bonds us to one another. We can love each other with conditions or with respect. The difference is harmony, a form of heaven on earth. When we have respect for one another's free will, then we have peace. For me, home is no longer a physical place. Home is me. It is everywhere my heart and love go. Wherever I am, that is where I call home. What better way to express our freedom than to let go of the wounds that have kept us oppressed? What better way to use my words than to say, I forgive you? What better way to say I am free than to say that I love another without fear? Let us enjoy this moment in life. The past is done, the future is coming, and the best way to say hello is by learning to say goodbye. I am love, and peace starts with me. I do not see race, creed, religion, gender, or whatever else as a division of the human species. I do not see a belief that tears me away from my brother and sister. I do not see an ego, a personal importance that forbids me from communing with everything in existence. The point of life is to love, and to do so is a choice. In that choice, I take action, and in that action, I am love. I have a voice. I can use it to oppress, or I can use it to liberate. I can create, I can lead, and I can love. The same is true for you. Together we can say, I love. All we have and are is love. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Five Levels of Attachment, Toltec Wisdom for the Modern World, by Don Miguel Ruiz, Jr. Copyright 2013 by Don Miguel Ruiz, Jr. Foreword by Don Miguel Ruiz, Sr. Performed by Arthur Mori. Directed by Francesca Amari. Performance copyright 2013 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.